One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
The Buffalo Chicken Sub has arrived at Penn Station East Coast Subs. It's got the kick, it's got the crunch, and it's packed with bold buffalo flavor, melty cheese, and perfectly grilled chicken. Only for a limited time. Name a better pair than buffalo and chicken. Fresh cut fries and freshly squeezed lemonade? How about all of the above? Order the new Buffalo Chicken Sub any way you like it at your nearest Penn Station location today. Order ahead online at penn-station.com for easy pickup. Or enjoy it hot off the grill for dine-in at Penn Station East Coast Subs.
So it ends. Mercifully, Oklahoma's 2024 season comes to a close 21-20. It's the Navy midshipman who scored 21 unanswered, stave off a late rally. Michael Hawkins Jr. throws to Drake Roberts. Oklahoma misses the two-point conversion. 6-7 for the second time in 3 years. That is how it ends in Fort Worth for Brett Venables. Recap of the Armed Forces Bowl. I'm Ryan Chapman. That is John Hoover for the Sooners on SI postgame podcast. And John, it's not that Oklahoma lost the Armed Forces Bowl, right? We've kind of talked about it. What does it really mean? All that stuff. It's the manner in which Oklahoma lost the Armed Forces Bowl that is only going to compound and add on to all the questions that are going to be asked of Brett Venables and his coaching staff, but mainly Brett Venables as he heads into a pivotal 2025.
Yeah, something Brent said that stood out to me in the postgame press conference was not good enough by me, the head coach. This all falls at my feet. And he's right. You can read a column just got posted a few minutes ago about his take on the Oklahoma defense. He says, once again, that the Oklahoma defense isn't what it was for the last decade. We weren't that bad, is basically what he's been telling us all year. We weren't that bad. We were bad enough to lose at Missouri. We were bad enough to lose to Navy. But, guys, we weren't that bad. We weren't as bad as they were in 2018 or 2022 or 2021, I guess. That can't be the standard. So, Brent's got a long way to go to fix the offense, the defense, and other, the transfer portal and the NIL and so many things that are systematic right now, I should say systemic, of what this program is and where it's been and where it's going and how the hell it's going to get there when your opposing schedule's coming up 2025 harder than 2024. And, even if it's not, you're still in the Southeastern Conference. You're doing business now with the biggest of the big boys. You can't afford to have an off year or two or three, right, where you go 6-7. This is a big fix for Brent Venables. He's got a big, big future starting, with the guys that have arrived in the transfer portal. And he said there's going to be a couple more. I don't know if he meant a couple more leaving, a couple more coming in. A couple coming in is what I think. But he's got so far to go from what this fan base expects out of this program.
We'll see if South Dakota or Missouri State is anybody in the portal that Oklahoma can scoop up to add to their FCS All-Americans. Part of what is so concerning about today, though, is you're right. Next year, same SEC schedule just flipped. We knew that. Yep. And then you're basically replacing Temple with Michigan, right? And that's a Michigan team that is asking their own questions of their own offense, all that. And this was supposed to be the first glimpse of that unit, right? You don't have John Mateer, but you have a lot of this offense. Yep. Oklahoma, their transfer portal additions, Jamani Gibson coming from Arkansas Pine Bluff, Keontez Lewis coming from Illinois State by way of UCLA and Wisconsin, then Isaiah Zatanga from Arkansas. Those are your three so far, and a lot of the thought process was they believe in their young talent at wide receiver that has done nothing all year long. They believe in their young talent along the offensive line, especially that left side. On defense, they believe in a bunch of those young guys coming through. So while this Armed Forces Bowl was not going to make or break the 2024 season, and while it's not going to be high, low, whatever, there's a lot of improvement to be made before the 2025 season. That's why today's game mattered, getting the look at that. And when you run down it, John, Oklahoma wins the first downs, 27-11. Oklahoma wins the total offense, 433-318. You're sitting here going, okay, both teams missed a field goal. The Sooners had one fumble that led to the missed field goal, so their one turnover didn't hurt them. Yep. You would go on paper, that feels really comfortable, right? But here's the things. 7 penalties for 45 yards for Oklahoma, one of which a backbreaker wipes away a huge 50-yard-plus run from Michael Hawkins Jr., but it's stuff that doesn't show up in the box score. Yeah, it's 6-7 drops, 2 by Sam Franklin, 2 by Zion Reagans, 2 by Zion Kearney, and 1 by Gavin Sochak that don't show up. It's hard to watch, and it's the fact that, and this is what I wrote about after the game, kind of season obituary slash previewing the offseason. When you look and you go through the Brent Venables era, you've got game control issues, whether that be all throughout 2022, and if you want to be like Band-Aid roster, fine. But the game control stuff, regardless of who was on the team or not, has been a through line. You look at their 2 losses in regular season play last year. They had the interception by Ethan Downs that should have ended the Kansas game. They're finding ways to lose games from position of victory. They had the late turnover in Bedlam. They're finding ways to lose games from position of victory. They had righted the ship in the Alamo Bowl against Arizona. And then Jahlil Farouk, fumble, scoop and score, a flurry. 10 minutes later, we're looking up going, how the heck is Oklahoma down by a couple possessions? You look today.
Oh, the Missouri game.
And that's not even this year. You talk about Missouri. You talk about just not even being in the football game against Tech. Like, you were in the game against Texas, then 2 fumbles, and suddenly you look up and go, what the heck just happened? Today, Oklahoma, the formula, John, to play a triple option football team is to not lead by 1, but lead by 2 possessions and have a chance to go up 3 scores early. If you do that, a team that wants to chew the clock and nickel and dime you and just run over you and wear you down has to just drop back and pass, which plays into what R.A.S. and Thomas was to do, plays into the Danny Okoye's we didn't get to see today, all that stuff. That did not happen. Oklahoma got up 14-0. They got almost there, and then they start driving. It's hiccups. They get stopped on 2 different 4th-and-2 or shorters, 1 as they were going to try to make it into the red zone, 1 near midfield, and it's just the hallmark of bad football teams is finding ways to shoot yourself in the foot when you've been in a position of strength. And that's what Brent Venables' teams have done for 3 years, even when they won 10 games.
What I said about it being hard to watch, I don't mean like it's ugly football. It is ugly football. But what I'm saying is hard to watch is you're seeing guys out here who are running down the field with their hands open, and the ball hits them right in the hands, and it goes through their hands. 3 times could have been touchdowns. 3 times could have been touchdowns. Michael Hawkins doing everything he can to put the ball on the money. He did that 1 time and got a 56-yard touchdown out of it because the guy caught it. Zion Kearney caught it. So it's hard to watch because you see these kids that are, you know they're working and you know they're nervous about being the next guy up. And, oh, I'm a freshman and this is my big shot. And then they just fail time after time after time. That's the part that's hard to watch. It's hard to watch, like, personally. Like, ooh, that hurts. You know, I feel bad for the kid. I feel bad for the coaches and everybody that's put, so much into developing these kids. You worry about the 2024 recruiting class receiver-wise because it hasn't gone well. You could say that about – I don't think you could say that yet about the offensive line. Those guys are still young. But this offensive line today, the guys – the best group that Oklahoma has run out there this season, 5th straight game with this starting 5 of the offensive line, couldn't move the football on 4th-and-1 and 4th-and-2. Fourth and one and 4th-and-2. Couldn't get a first down. Couldn't stay on the field. Couldn't sustain drives. You got drop passes. You got the penalties you talked about. Your best passer for the day. I'm kidding. The punter, Luke Elzinga, throws another completion. He's 3-for-3 on the season. The dude's on fire. Put him at quarterback, right? He has an 11-yard punt. He's an all-SEC-type punter, and yet he has an 11-yard punt. So many mistakes, just compounding and compounding and compounding. And like you said, this is emblematic of everything that we've seen from the last 3 years from this football team under Brent Venables?
The fourth and two from the OU 45, that resulted in Navy's first touchdown. It got them back into the game, 14-7. That's the drive after Oklahoma stalled on the Navy 20-yard line on a fourth and one. So two drives back-to-back. Oklahoma went 9 plays, 65 yards. It wasn't anything like sexy. 6 runs, 3 passes, goes down, opens up the scoring. Then you have the 6-play, 85-yard touchdown drive, which was really cool because it started out with the 2 Sam Franklin drops. That's where the drop started. Yeah. Brent Venables basically had to go out on the field, and he chewed Sam Franklin alive. But it was a third down Houdini act by Michael Hawkins Jr. to pick it up on the ground, and then it was a big 3rd and 7, I believe it was, when they ran him out to the left, had 2 receivers veer out to the left. Both were covered. Good job by Navies, but the protection was good. Hawkins rolls, finds Zion Kearney. Zion Kearney runs through an arm tackle, and you're sitting here going, boom, look at that. The freshman, the footwork, all that stuff we had talked about with Hawkins, with Kearney, he's making a catch. He's not quitting in the scramble drill. He's breaking a tackle. It all looks good. And then from there, there were another 5 drops that really derailed any chance that Michael Hawkins Jr. had to get into any kind of rhythm, John. He had 2 drops from Reagan's, one of those on a play that Michael Hawkins Jr. had done a good job to keep the play alive, and he was trying to find a deep crosser down the field. Reagan's on it, just hits his hand, kind of bats off it, unable to get anything going. And suddenly you look at it and turnover on downs, the bad punt, then end of half, a poorly mismanaged 2-minute drill to end the first half. Again. They come out, they run 9 plays, but it's a punt. Then Michael Hawkins Jr. has the fumble the play after Horvath's 95-yard touchdown run. How many times this year has it been, John, immediately the next play after something bad or good happens, then Oklahoma comes down, misses the field goal. They have to punt. It seemed like a puzzling call at the time. Brent Venables had all of his timeouts. It ended up being perfect because Navy had an incomplete pass, and the 2-minute warning meant that he only had to burn 1 timeout. So a little bit of that there, and then they come down the field. But it was bordering on a disaster. And it wasn't because Michael Hawkins Jr. was bad. It was because he couldn't get into rhythm after he'd gotten into rhythm. Because here's the thing with the freshman receiver, Sean. They've played all year, and they've not got any better.
Played a little bit all year.
They've been the guys all year.
Back half of the year, you're right. Since Burks won.
A chance outside of J.J. Hester. Mm-hmm. Deion Burks didn't play again today. So outside of J.J. Hester, the guys that played have had all year long, really since week 4. Yeah. One of those guys should have emerged, should have made a job. Should have, what we saw from like Jacob Jordan in the South Carolina game, we should have seen at some point Zion Kearney or Raggins or whoever it was go, wow, you know, the offense is all bad, but at least he's made some plays in Missouri again. Yeah. They've done nothing. They've been awful for a group that,
a
lot of them were supposed to redshirt, but you've also had a whole season to develop. It's not like they were thrown in there for the Alabama, the LSU game, and they were given bowl practice to go. It's been like this all about SEC play.
And if I'm not mistaken, a few of them were here in the spring as well for spring football. So they've had multiple opportunities over the course of the past 12 months, really, truly, to develop. And we haven't seen any. Their most recent game might have been their worst game today, dropping 2 passes each guy like they did. You know, I don't know where Oklahoma goes from here because we talked about it in the postgame wrap. There's so much work to do. Where do you start if you're Brent Venables? Well, you start by, you know, bringing those guys in from the transfer portal. Oh, those guys, the 6 guys from FCS that you signed, those are your transfer portal guys, 6 of the 9, in addition to the number one player overall in the portal, John Mateer. Welcome. Guess what? You're probably going to have the hardest job beating out the guys that are there because Michael Hawkins is coming off a really good game. I thought Hawkins was fantastic today when he didn't drop the football on the fumble. That was poor ball security by him. He needs to do better. But I think he made a statement today. I think Hawkins said to Mateer, and you know there was a question about to Hawkins about Mateer in the postgame, and he addressed him directly and said, yeah, no, we've talked, and said he was at breakfast today, right, here in Fort Worth, Mateer is. So that's cool. But it's I'm not going to go so far as to predict who's going to win. I think Mateer probably will win, but after today, I'm not that confident. I think Hawkins has got a kind of a fighter spirit to him.
And
has a ton of talent, too. You saw in the long touchdown run, the 50-yard touchdown run, he was gone out of the gate. Not even the Auburn defense was going to catch him today, right?
Yeah.
They had no chance. And we've seen that speed from him. He can throw the football. His touchdown pass, 56 yards, was an absolute dime on the run. After scrambling all the way to the left sideline, he turns around and comes back and scrambles, gets away, throws a dime for a touchdown. The kid's got talent. And he's got a little heart to him, too.
He's got talent, and he's a competitor. Yeah. We know that. He wasn't supposed to start with Jack Stoll, right? And then he goes in there. I didn't see anything today that, like, Oklahoma's not paying John Mateer to come in and be the backup quarterback. I didn't see anything today that actually makes me think this is going to be a competition. Like,
really?
I thought he was good. Yes, was he hurt by some drops? Yeah, I didn't think that Hawkins was bad at all by any means.
Yeah.
No, but I think
he would have been well over 300 without those drops.
Yeah, but I think to, like, be in an actual competition, you need to come and make some sort of statement today. And right. I thought he, judging by what we've seen play quarterback this year, it was maybe the best quarterbacking performance. But
well, how about this? Would you take Hawkins with the three portal receivers from next year, or would you take Would you take Mateer with today's receivers?
I'd still take Mateer.
Would you?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know enough about those FCS receivers to know how good they were.
Hawkins was good. He was fine. It's not like he was making Navy guys look silly every single snap. Like he did some just nice evasive stuff
here and there.
But and he had the one really nice run that was pulled back by just a mindless Avecchi Wiwu holding that was unnecessary. But it wasn't like this was like a four quarter. Oh my God, how is Navy's defense going to figure this out? Like they got acclimated.
You know what I mean?
Right. I thought he was good.
That's fair.
I think he'll compete. Sure. I saw nothing to make me think that this is an actual competition worth really building up like a quarterback competition.
Well, now, if that's true, is he going to transfer? He said he wants to be at Oklahoma, but if you come in, if the new guy comes in and you're the incumbent, so to speak, and they walk in and say, you're sitting on the bench, I'm out.
If he was like an OU legacy and he didn't have his brother sign, probably.
Yeah.
But like,
that's probably true.
There's somewhere on the scale between I think this is way more of a competition than like the Kyler Austin Kendall competition.
Yeah, quite a bit.
And in hindsight, it sounds really dumb when we talk about Baker Mayfield, Trevor Knight being a quarterback competition, but you covered it.
Yep.
Trevor Knight was the incumbent starter. Baker Mayfield had come in off of one really, really good year at Texas Tech. And, I mean, we got to the Tennessee game, and people at halftime of the Tennessee game were going, did they make the right decision?
Should have been
Trevor Knight. I think it's a lot closer to that than the Kyler, Austin Kendall, I promise
that
guys it's a quarterback competition. You know what I mean? But I also I would be stunned, barring an injury, if John Mateer doesn't get the first, second, and third chance next year. And a lot of that with portal stuff.
I agree somewhat.
Yeah. I don't think this is bad by Mike Hawkins. It's almost
– you don't pay that kind of money for a guy like this to kind of sit. You're correct.
It's also – part of this – I felt so bad for Hawkins today because how much different would it have felt if Zion Reagan's the one that hit his outstretched arm, which was a great scramble – if you have that, and so let's just take that one. So there you're going over 300. Then you're adding another 50 to the rushing total, and suddenly Hawkins has 400 total yards of offense. How much of that changes things? It's impossible to know because I'm so sour on what we saw from this team that blew a 14-0 lead against a triple option team and allowed 20 unanswered points that, like, it's kind of like the reek, the stink of this entire performance seeps over to everybody, even the guys that played well.
That's fair.
Like Ethan Downs, I thought was really, really good today, and it's going to go poof into the annals of history because you couldn't cover the fact that you knew Navy was going to try and play action, pop past you a little bit more than your typical triple option, and they even did it in predictable moments. A third and seven, a third and one on the plus side of the 50, and Oklahoma's defense got sucked in and allowed it to happen every time, it felt like.
Yeah,
except for the one time they threw at Eli Bowen. Eli Bowen was great on the flea flicker.
That's true. That's true. They had a bunch of little mini type mistakes would be a good way to describe it, where you don't really the coach when he runs back the tape and sets down the player and they play it over and over and over like they do on video. The coach is going to see it and the player is going to see it, but in the course of a game, you might not see. R. Mason Thomas on, I think, second and nine, getting an outside release on a dead bead, you know, in the crosshairs, pass rush on the quarterback, and the quarterback saying, oh, cool, we suckered him into pass rushing in an outside lane. I'm going to run this up here. And Horvath took off running for like 15 yards, 16 yards. I think that was the game. And it's just little tiny, teeny mistakes that eventually it's a death by a thousand paper cuts. They add up. And that's what you start to see, you know, third down conversions and fourth down conversions. And you're like, well, how did they keep that drive alive? Well, how did they keep the ball for 7.5 minutes? It's because one guy got outside of what he was supposed to do, didn't do his assignment, wasn't disciplined. That's one of the things that really, when this matchup was first announced back on December,
whatever it was,
2nd, I think, I can't remember.
It was December 8th because the portal opened on the 9th.
The portal opened the next day. That's right. So when this was announced, I said, okay, this is one of the most disciplined teams that we've seen all year versus one of the most undisciplined teams that we've seen all year. I hate to call, point fingers and call names and cast aspersions, but that's what it has to be. Oklahoma is an undisciplined football team, and it showed out here today.
Yeah, and again, I think the really frustrating thing is if the roles were reversed and Oklahoma had gone down 14-0 with like an early fumble, then I think we've all watched enough football to know how that plays out with a triple option team. You're fighting uphill the rest of the way. They're trying to chew the clock, where you're at, all that stuff. Oklahoma got Navy in the spot where that's dead to rights. That's the recipe for a blowout. Mm-hmm. The game should have been over at the start of the second quarter when Oklahoma starts marching and it stalls on the 20-yard line. So much so I asked Navy coach Brian Newberry after the game, I was like, hey, you were down 14-0, giving the ball back to Oklahoma. I don't have to tell you, you know. And his eyes just lit up with this big smile of just like, yeah, I was worried. That was his first thing. And then he talked about that it was a credit to his guys to kind of acclimate to the speed of Michael Hawkins Jr. and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But he basically was just like, yeah, like that was going to be a really bad situation if they didn't get that stop there. They did get the stop, and credit to them for then going out. And it wasn't after that they scored, but it was the second stop. They got the fourth and two from the Oklahoma 45, and Michael Hawkins Jr. didn't get close.
Yep.
Like they didn't even need to measure. Like once everything settled, they looked, and then boom, from there, that's when Navy goes out. It finishes off with an 11-yard touchdown where he makes one guy miss, but really it was just well blocked up. And suddenly it went from Oklahoma's getting the ball back. At worst, it should be 17-0 because they're approaching the red zone, John, to it's 14-7 at halftime. Navy's getting the ball back. Both teams come out and chew some clock, but the opening salvo from each side, it plays to a tug-of-war. And it meant that Oklahoma, again, they did everything they needed to in the first two possessions on both sides of the ball to be in the spot to deliver a knockout punch. And instead, you're settling down going, it's going to be a fourth quarter fight because Navy doesn't have to do what they don't want to do. And that's when the big play happened.
Yep.
Horvath, we looked at it a million times. It looked like PJ Adebowore got...
It was in the hole.
In the hole, went a little outside. That allowed the left guard to just totally seal out Jaden Jackson. I believe it was Peyton Bowen and Michael Boganowski, the two safeties behind, that weren't able to make things happen. And
they both flowed to the right where the run action was. There was a handoff. There was There was a fake handoff, and it looked like they were starting the triple option action where the tailback's coming behind the quarterback, and he's going to ride it out, and then he's going to either hand it or he's going to keep it and pitch it. And what he does is he keeps it and cuts it up the middle, and everybody flowed, and the thing was wide open. You had about – I counted at least four guys, possibly five, that were way out of position.
Brent Venables sub.
95 yards.
Got to say inside, went outside, technique, eyes, all that stuff.
Yep.
Suddenly, it's the longest play, the longest rushing play in Navy history.
Golly.
The history
all
of Navy
football. All they do is run the football.
The history of Navy football. Unreal. It's 14-14.
You know why? Because Navy historically has so many little slow white guys that can't go 95 yards. That dude did it against the Oklahoma defense, went 95 yards. One player had a shot at him, Woody Washington from the backside, and they called him down at first, but he stretched the ball across the goal line, and as he was going down, Woody couldn't catch him, and nobody else. I mean, both safeties were out of position. Kip Lewis took a step to the left where all the blocking action was, and he got himself buried behind all that, all the blocking. You got a 210-pound linebacker that's not going to be able to fight through that trash. And then both linebackers also followed. One guy took the pitch man, and one guy took the dive. And there was no pitch, and there was no dive. It was a quarterback keeper up the middle. And it's like, y'all forgot to cover the quarterback.
Well, it's
option 101.
Man with the ball. Man with the ball. You got to stop the ball first.
Stop the football first. You got to stop the dive. You got to stop the quarterback, and you got to stop the pitch. But the quarterback has the football, and that's one of the things we learned back in the day, man. When you play triple option offense, you got to get – and it, they did a good job for the most part.
Well, here's the thing.
For the day, but holy crap, 95 yards on one play?
Navy finished with 318 total yards of offense. 143 of them came on three plays. And that's not to say – like, Horvath, credible warrior. I love watching him play football.
He'll be a great defender of our country someday.
In the throw game, he was not great today. There were two completions that, because he didn't hit his guy in stride, they had to readjust and ended up falling down. Both of those would have been touchdowns. Yep. One of them would have been a touchdown additionally to what Oklahoma didn't give up, because that was on the first drive of the game. So it should have been 28-20 there. I believe they scored on the other drive. He also missed another guy wide open, but that kicked off the sequence. That 95-yard run, that happens. Next play, Hawkins Jr. fumbles. Oklahoma's defense holds. Navy misses the field goal, but then what does Oklahoma do? Can't give them success. Can't live with it. That's a Brent Venables tenet now. They go miss the field goal, and then Navy goes on. This was the option 101. They get the ball back, 14-14, go 12 plays, 66 yards, eat up 7.5 minutes. That was where you went, okay, you had the chance early. You didn't take it. You can't deliver a knockout blow because they're a bad football team, incapable of doing it. Again, it's not that they lost this game to go 6-7. If they were 7-6, and all would be saying, oh, everything's fixed.
Yeah.
Because they went 6-7, I think it's just the manner at which Oklahoma has a very high standard. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, Brent Venables is a head coach. It's the questions that are being asked. This has been 3 years of it. Even in a 10-3 season, the 10-3 season, I know you're probably tired of hearing this. Oklahoma, since the Big 12 was a thing, beat Texas once and missed the Big 12 championship game in 1996. It did not happen again until 2023. They beat Texas. They beat the best team on their schedule. And why? Because he's a bad football coach, head coach. The team can't handle success. You piss away a Kansas game where you had a moment where it should have been, oh, my gosh, the defense comes up and beats. You're in that bedlam game when it stalls out.
We had a double-digit lead.
Yeah, it's all the tenets of a bad football team, and we've seen it for 3 years. Yeah. It even when they're good, you have the UCF game. Who stinks? Mm-hmm. And you have to hold on for dear life. That Cincinnati game. Now, that's early in the year. You can grow up that. But what Brent Venables' team has gotten better over the year?
None of them.
He's 0-3.
There's a reason he's 0-3 in bowl games. The teams have not gotten better. The teams, as the transfer portal has taken its toll on the Oklahoma roster, you've seen a dwindling of the Oklahoma talent. You've seen a loss of product in the Oklahoma, the quality of Oklahoma football as the – you know, guys transfer out, and you can't replace them that for the bowl game that semester, right? You got to coach some guys up. You got to find some freshmen. You got to develop some backups, whatever it is. That hasn't happened in any of these three bowl games.
And again, it's a thermostat temperature thing, right? Like, because you're 0-3 in bowl games, that's not the end all be all. Bowl games now mean less than ever, right?
Well, but you're 0-3 in crappy bowl games too.
The only reason
you can't win it. Bob Stoops used to be go to the Insight Bowl. Remember that? And the Connecticut Fiesta Bowl. Remember that? Bob Stoops used to go to crappy bowls and win
on
the Holiday Bowl. You know,
went on autopilot.
Right.
What's in El Paso? Sun Bowl.
UTEP, the Sun Bowl. Yes.
Yeah, against Stanford. But these Oklahoma. It's again the whether you go with a depleted roster in 2022. Fine, we get it. Context, all that stuff. The team was not better at the end of the season.
Yep.
What did they do in the last game of the regular season? Do you remember what they did in 2022, last game of the regular season?
Yeah, went to Texas Tech and crapped their pants.
You're telling me that they got up early, big, in a game, and then let an inferior opponent back in the game, and then suddenly were in it for four quarters? And did that one go to overtime? Yeah, yes. Brent Venables didn't let this thing go to overtime. It's the same game. We watched the same game. It was just the option version of it today and then the air raid version of it. But he's not growing as a head coach.
No.
He's not.
No.
I don't know. I think that's why the Panthers are so mad, and rightly so, because now you're telling me that this roster, just with another spring of development, which who has faith in that coaching staff, you're going to add in – Washington State's quarterback, top play in the portal, got it. You're going to add in an Arkansas Pine Bluff wide receiver. I know he caught 1,200 yards. I get it. Production.
FCS All-American.
If you were adding a wide receiver from Ole Miss and Satanga from Arkansas, and you went and got a wide receiver from UCLA, and you're telling me that you're taking a shot on Javonte Gibson, guy from Pine Bluff, I'd be like, cool, great, awesome.
That was your first commit.
That was your first guy. And then you went out and you got Keontez Lewis from Illinois State, who's played at UCLA and played at Wisconsin, but it's not like he was a 1,000-yard guy at either spot. And then you got Satanga at Arkansas. Totally cool with Satanga. You're a Brendan Thompson replacement. We get it. And then you're adding a Western Carolina right tackle, a Stanford tackle who was on a bad Stanford team.
Western Carolina quarterback.
Which can be the third guy, free pass, all that stuff. Yep. They're Black Friday shopping in the transfer portal when you need to make big improvement. I don't understand what they're doing, unless they're just broke. And if they're just broke, they're broke. I get it. But they weren't broke enough to fend off North Carolina for John Mateer.
You're going under major renovations in your program. At certain positions, you need major renovations. And what are you doing? You're spending your weekends at garage sales, looking for parts, looking for pieces.
It's concerning. And then you look today.
And I'm not trying to be mean. You guys know me. You guys who know me and have known me for a long time know that the sad part about John Hoover is I tell the freaking truth. I just do. So that's what I'm seeing is what I'm saying.
And what you see today.
I just invented the saying.
What I'm seeing is what I'm saying. Put that on a t-shirt.
That's right.
Here's the other puzzling thing. Xavier Robinson, your revelation from Missouri into Alabama into LSU. He gets 8 touches today. 2 of those were receptions in checkdown moments at that poorly just mega mismanaged into the first half. Basically today, it was Sawchuk on the first. If you were telling me that you're going Sawchuk and Robinson, splitting those carries, chop it up, issue.
Perfect.
No issue. But it felt like they went. Sawchuk was going to get the first drive. Then Sam Franklin was going to get the second drive until he dropped the first 2 passes the second drive. Then it was, okay, this is the Tatum and Robinson drive. Why are you not giving – coming in today, if you had told me that Sawchuk gets 15 carries, Hawkins gets 15 carries, Xavier Robinson gets 15 carries, I say, great game plan. Let's all go home. I don't understand.
Yeah. I don't either. I don't know what to say. I have no idea why Xavier Robinson didn't get the ball 35 times today. Right. Again, a meaningless bowl game. Right. Fort Worth, Texas, playing Navy, trying not to have a losing record. Give the young kid the rock as many times as it takes. He has proven in a very short amount of time that he can do some serious damage to teams like Alabama. Right. He had a couple of great plays against LSU. I don't get it. I don't understand. But are they like grooming him for tight end? Because they don't have any tight ends.
I guess. Devon Mitchell did tweet out after the game, if you missed it. I'll pull up the exact tweet here if I was better at my job. I already had it up. But basically the gist of it was Devon Mitchell saying, I was the reason I wasn't on the field. It wasn't Josh Finley or the coaching staff or all that stuff. So some great ownership there from Devon Mitchell. But, quote, I know a lot of people got a lot of questions about why I ain't been on the field and blaming Coach V and Joe John. But all honesty, I put myself in the position to not be on the field. I was very much inconsistent this year, but all caps, I trust the Oklahoma staff. Y'all should do the same. 100 emoji. So there's Devon Mitchell, who got 0 snaps today. But it was Jake Roberts. Jake Roberts had an awesome moment. Jake Roberts' final moment at Oklahoma should have been catching a touchdown in the back of the end zone. If they get the 2-point conversion, he rides off to the sunset. Yeah. The Norman North kid, Norman kid comes back.
Would have been cool.
Instead, Joe John Finley keeps Michael Hopkins Jr. in the pocket for the 2-point conversion play, which I had no issue with going for 2. Were you cool with it?
No, I love the idea of going for 2. You don't go to overtime in a stupid bowl game like this.
Your offense had not had success since literally the first quarter.
Correct.
But no issues.
You put together a magnificent 2-minute drive at the end of the game. Fantastic. With – one timeout, was it? Because
two.
They had to burn?
He had 2 timeouts at the start of the drive.
Okay, so they only had to burn – okay, so they burned one early in the drive. That was their second.
And yes. Yes.
No, I love going for 2, and I didn't get a chance because of the suddenness of it, and then boom, it's over, and then they're doing the onside kick. I didn't get a chance to look at the play much. You know, like we did with the 95-yarder. Like you said, we looked at it 20 or 25 times. I didn't get a chance to look at who was covered, who wasn't open, who got open and who he didn't see. Where should he have gone with football? What were his first and second reads? I didn't get a chance to look at that, and I regret that. I should have spent some time trying to figure out what he was looking at because he He was not confident on that pass. The two-point conversion looked like he drifted to the left, pump fake a couple times, and then kind of bounced back to the right, and by then had two guys on it, had a hold of him by the waist, and were slinging him to the ground.
Well, Navy had started to send some pressure in the second half, because I think that they kind of sensed that there were some drops. Mm-hmm. Now let's see if we can upset a true freshman quarterback. Yeah.
They did send a delayed pressure. The guy that flushed him and then came around and brought him down was the same guy. He was delayed. He was just kind of watching, spying, and then, okay, I'll go get him now. So he did not expect that second wave of pressure.
I just don't know why you don't get him out on the move. Like, you could put on the left hash. You could add the whole two-thirds of the field so you don't roll out to the right and cut the field off. You already saw the second touchdown of the game came from a rollout gone bad. He could improvise. He could make that thing happen. Mm-hmm. Go be an athlete. Instead, he's staying in the pocket. So you flip it over defensively. It played well for probably 65%. The issue is the 35% that you didn't were absolute backbreakers. Yep. And it's kind of been a little bit of what this defense has been all year long. You go back to the Tennessee game, they played well for 80% of that, but the three big plays, the three big passing plays, did you win? Texas after the fumble and you can't get a guy on the field, what was it? One big rushing play, touchdown, did you win there? You look at Auburn, it was a couple of big deep shots. Texas had a couple of big deep shots. South Carolina doesn't really matter because the game was over before the defense really got to play football. Ole Miss, it was those first drives in the first and third quarter and then some deep shots at the tight end. Like, it's mostly good, a little bit of bad, a little bit of bad does you in because your offense sucks, but also, like, no one's confusing this for an elite defense.
Yeah. Do you think they would have won?
It's fixed, but it's not elite.
If Bowman and Stutzman don't opt out, which nobody's blaming them for opting out, I mean, that's the right decision. Do you think if they had played today, it would have made the difference in winning and losing?
No, because
I think they'd have to go 95 yards. Both guys being on the field in that play, which there's no guarantee they would have, but both guys being on the field for that play, there's no way he goes 95.
Sure, but this defense looked like the defense we've seen all year, which is they play really well for 80% of the game. Yeah. There's a couple of big plays, and I guess right now we're saying, would the difference in those big plays have been a 20-yard gain instead of a 95-yard gain, which would have been huge, but...
And the story, so the column that I wrote post-game was about that and how Stutzman and Bowman are gone, so guess what you're going to see in 2025? Pretty much what you saw out here today.
Which,
same defense.
It wasn't like you saw – it wasn't like Danny Quay, Nigel Smith, Jeremiah Newcomb, all three guys who didn't play. It wasn't like it was because they were out there. You saw a lot of Ethan Downs, a lot of Trace Ford. You're not going to have those guys. I don't know what they're going to do at defensive end. They seem to have no interest in adding a defensive end, despite the fact that one of your defensive ends, PJ, was an issue on one of those big plays.
Yeah.
He had a good moment in the – I was talking to you. It was the third quarter when Horvath – it wasn't quite a sack, so I think he technically got back to the line of scrimmage. But PJ, unlike R. Mason, who – bowled off the line in a second and nine. PJ took one or two steps, was like, I don't need a huge pass rush move, then saw that he was shot back to pass, then did a secondary move and flushed him out. You didn't get credit for the sack because he flushed him out. But he had some good moments, but it's going to be inconsistent. And it comes all the way back to that, inconsistent. That is Oklahoma football under Brent Venables. And the fact of the matter is, with whether it be NIL, the portal, all these playing fields that get leveled, you can't afford to be as inconsistent as Oklahoma is, because even when everything breaks right, you end up going 10-2 and not making your conference title game.
Yep.
When things go poorly, when you get injury luck, when you're in a much better league, you go 6-6.
Yep. That's
and you fair. Finish 6-7 against Navy.
Yeah, no, I have nothing to add to that.
And now
that sums it up.
Now, as you spin it forward, we don't even know what the coaching staff's gonna look like. The next time we'll be on a football field for the spring game. Brent Venables was asked after the game about reevaluate, because he had talked about 6-7, you can reevaluate everything, everyone take a drink. You've heard that from him before. I'm kind of over the Brent Venables post-game press conference experience, as far as, like, it's the same. I get it. He's disappointed. He's not disappointed in the effort, disappointed in the execution. He's now leaning on the Alex Grinch defense as his crutch to be like, well, I fixed the defense. Yeah. Not to mention that the offense was as bad as any of those defenses ever were this year. That was you as well. He's talked about that. He's owned that. He's not run away from it, but that conveniently doesn't get brought up 7 times. But he was asked about reevaluating some of those spots on the coaching staff. It was asked in a way that could be broad, but it was pretty much targeted at the lack of development at tight end and running back and receiver. Rittman was like, yeah, of course, we're going to evaluate everything. This isn't the place for that. So that was targeted as, will Joe John be back? Will DeMarco be back? Will Emmett Jones actually be back? And then, totally elsewhere, from the other side of life, we have West Virginia, Rich Rodriguez, now the head coach back at West Virginia, coming from Jacksonville State. Yep. He has not hired a defensive coordinator yet. Zach Alley was his defensive coordinator a couple seasons ago, obviously, two seasons at Jacksonville State. We have reached out to the West Virginia side of things because rumors just kept popping up this week that on the West Virginia side, it feels like the Mountaineers, at least from their side, once this game is done, yep, think that they're going to throw a bunch of money at Zach Alley.
Making a big push.
All that stuff, make a big push. He was asked on the OU post-game broadcast after that, and he kind of did the, oh, this stuff always pops up, and he talked about, I'm looking forward to next year, ready to get back to work. So it wasn't the unequivocal, I'm not going anywhere, but he was talking about going back to work next year with Oklahoma.
He's
so
smart. He knows that's not how you get raises. Yeah, that, by saying, I'm not leaving.
Amen.
You leave that door open and get yourself a big raise.
Amen. So we'll see with Zach Alley. I would still be pretty surprised. I would even label it as shock if he takes that West Virginia defensive coordinator job.
Me too.
I've not been able to hear it.
He's
like
a Venables clone, let's be honest.
Everything for the Oklahoma side of things has been confidence, yes, but from the people I've talked to. I don't know. I guess we haven't compared notes when you do it on air. But everything I've talked about, everyone I've talked to has just been cool, calm, confident, quiet is kind of the thing. Not the quiet of like, oh, God, what's happening? Yeah. Quiet, and not that they're not expecting Zach Gowdy to be back. So I would be stunned, shocked, all those things. But
he's Venable's best hire.
He is his best hire by far. And if he loses him after 1 year, then what are you pointing to? Like, what's the sign that you're tapping? You're defending the standard. We get it. You fail at that miserably. But what's the other side you're tapping at? You're Brent Venables. It's been bad.
We got a new DC. That's what the new that's what you paint up on the wall.
Paint up on the wall. Two straight years, two new coordinators. How could this go wrong? So that's what you're looking at, 6-7, 10-3, 6-7. Pop quiz, do you know the last time that Oklahoma had a head coach that had two losing seasons in his first 3 years?
1935 and 1936.
Oh, I wish it was. It was obviously John Blake. We're going back to the 90s. Okay. The last time that Oklahoma had a head coach who had two out of his 3 years losing seasons.
I was trying to cut John Blake some slack.
I know you were, but we know this. The Brent Venables era, 1998. Hope you liked it. Yeah? No? Did Oklahoma fans not like the 90s?
As I recall, they're not fond of the 90s.
At this point, and here's the issue, and now we're just going to get into some real, like, philosophical stuff. John and I spent a lot of time driving places, right, to cover these games, spent a lot of time road games, all that stuff. I had wondered to Hoove during the first season, not like when everything was bad, all that stuff, but just, hey, what does it look like if this is the Gary Gibbs of 2.0, where it's not bad, but you're not getting over the hump, and you're not quite winning at exactly the level, but like,
you're not getting better.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, we were doing the, what is it like if Brent Venables, and then this is year one. Is a home run hire? What does it look like if it doesn't go well? And between his work from Bill Snyder to Bob Stoops to Dabo Sweeney, I wasn't thinking that Brent Venables was going to be – I was like, man, he might – with all that coaching experience, maybe he's just a Gary Gibbs level coach. What does that look like? Brent Venables would be scrapping and clawing to have the kind of record that Gary Gibbs has right now. He's been better than Blake because of his second year, but it's not good.
No, it's not good. I've seen comments already from our YouTube videos, some Twitter stuff. People are, you know, and it's been this way for all season. It's been this way since probably the Tulane game, probably the Temple the Temple game.
I think Tennessee is when
Temple was terrible, and they put them away by scooping up the football at the 6 yard line and, you know, picking up the ball on a fumbled punt. That's how they pounded poor Temple into the ground. It's been that Houston the following week, Temple or Tulane. I mean, people have been riding Brent all season, and, you know, now that he's 6-7 and the season's over, saddle up and ride away from my money, because what you're saying is true. He has not gotten better as a head coach. He's not developed as a head coach. The program has not gotten better under him as a head coach. So I saw Joe Castiglione a couple of times. I didn't stop and engage him in conversation. I waved hi, Joe, a couple of those times. You could just see the machinations going on behind his, you know, in his head that are just like, he's probably thinking, please don't ask me any questions about Brent. Please don't ask me any questions about Brent. If you're him, would you like want to answer those at this point?
No, I mean,
season? Of course not.
He's had to sit through
a nightmare for him.
Joe's at every press conference, obviously. He's the athletic director. He's had to sit through a lot of losing press conferences.
Yes.
A lot. And a lot
add them up, it wouldn't come up to what Bob and Lincoln
Yeah.
Losing press conferences.
Already. I mean, and you're talking about the ways that Oklahoma loses football games.
Yeah.
The Missouri game.
Every one of them is winnable almost. Not everyone, but a lot of them are winnable.
Well, and that, I think that's almost at this point, in year one, when you're in those one score games, you can go, okay.
Yep.
He was not going to dumb down the defense because that's the defense they had to run. We talked about that. He gave everyone that grace period. He didn't just run everybody out of town. He talked about that in his second Big 12 media day. I wasn't like prime. You know what I mean? Didn't run them all out, all that stuff. Okay, so I can get behind you have all these one-loss losses, and then you show that improvement in year two. And on the field, they did show that improvement, but it's also one of the easiest schedules Oklahoma has ever played.
Ever.
A year ago. Mm-hmm. And again, I go back to you did it. You beat the most talented team on your schedule in Texas, and you didn't even make the conference championship game. Not right. You didn't. You made it back and lost to Texas the second time. Yep. You didn't even make it. You were praying that BYU could beat Oklahoma State. That's bad.
You nearly lost to UCF, like who he said was bad. You coughed up two losses late, and then the bowl game was an abject disaster.
Struggled against Cincinnati early.
Double-digit lead and in the bowl game, and you end up losing by double digits. I mean, that was last year, 10-3. I know, 10 wins. Hey, everybody's happy. That was not a good 10-win Oklahoma team. Not even close.
No, and then this year, again, it's the ways in which they lost the Missouri game, the way they lost today.
Yep.
Yeah, but you weren't in the Tennessee game. You weren't in the Texas game at halftime. You weren't in the South Carolina game at halftime. The two teams you beat Auburn, who was the worst team you played on your SEC schedule, mm-hmm. and you had a great win against Alabama. And that was a great win, and there's no taking away from that. Alabama was a top 15 team, a team that
does the performance against Alabama make you feel better or worse about this team going 6-7? This is what they're capable of, and yet for some reason they trip and stumble down the stairs every night when they go to bed. Right, it's a football game, and they come upstairs and they got the black eye, and you're like, what are you doing? Well, we lost again. Why did you lose? You kicked Alabama's ass. How did you fall down the stairs again?
Well, the performance against Alabama,
I don't get it.
Just tells me
it's frustrating for fans.
Well, it's frustrating, but it just tells me that you look at other bad football teams, because this is what it is, a bad football team, and every couple of years they pull one out of the hat. You know what I mean? And Iowa State.
You're calling it just a strict upset.
Yeah, it's just an upset. It was an
inexplicable upset.
It was Alabama, went on the road on senior night, big stadium, yeah. A lot of pride. Got NFL talent, but not a good football team. And it was just an upset. Like that, college football happened.
New coach.
And it happened in Brent Venables' case.
So it's confusing.
So all the Oklahoma fans are like, the injuries this year, yeah. They were 10-3 last. Tom Herman made a Big 12 championship game.
Not with this many injuries.
Brent hasn't. Does anyone think anyone in Austin was pointing to Tom Herman's second year where he made the Big 12 championship game? Didn't win it, but made it. And he's going, he didn't get enough time. No. Again, you guys are smart. It's Oklahoma football. We all know what this looks like and know what it smells like, and it looks bad and smells bad.
Yeah,
and that is why Brent Venables, he has a chance to show improvement in 2025, but that's why he's going to be under the gun every game in 2025.
Well, you got to win some of these games. These games that you've been losing down the stretch, giving up 95-yard plays in the third quarter, fourth quarter. Yeah, fourth quarter. You can't do that. You can't lose these games the way that Oklahoma's been losing.
Yeah, it'll be huge, a massive spring ahead. That'll be the next time that we're gathering, doing the football at OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. You're going to get Ben Arbuckle fully up and running. He was the quarterback's coach today, not calling plays. We knew that. He'll finally get to install his stuff. He'll have John Mateer doing more than just eating breakfast with the team. He'll be on campus battling all that stuff. So stick with us, OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. That's where you're going to find every story we wrote today, my kind of end of the season wrap up, your calm on the defense. If you want to read exactly what Zach Alley had to say, I put that up as well, OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. If you want to watch our post game wrap, if you want to watch the post game press conference, the highlights from today, OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com, or head to his YouTube page, John Hoover Media. The next time we'll have a post game cast, it'll be post-spring game where we'll get our first look at Ben Arbuckle's offense, get our first look at John Mateer.
Could be interesting.
And Michael Hawkins, they're getting it going. And then, I mean,
that'll be the end of spring, which is a competition. Yeah. So maybe we'll have some clarity on who the better quarterback is.
We shall see. We'll have SEC Media Days in the middle of July. And then, week two, it's Michigan.
We're spinning this thing forward, y'all.
Week two, Michigan. Week four, Auburn at home. Oklahoma, going into that first bye week, we will know what the tenor of 2025, if they've made the improvements, if Brent Venables has shown, A, improvement as a head coach, but B, that this was just on a lot of the injuries. Does by week four, will we know if Oklahoma's going to the college football playoff, something insane, or if it's going to be better?
Right.
No, but we'll know pretty quick, I think, if this is headed toward they're getting a lot better, they're getting on the track, can he win enough? We'll know if, oh my gosh, they're 4-0, it looks great, or they could very well be 2-2, and we'll already be watching going, how bad does it have to get against Texas? How bad does it have to get against South Carolina? It's going to be a really huge year ahead, and it kind of started off today. 2025 started today, and it started off on a sour note.
Yeah, and that's – Ryan's doing a good job projecting into the future, taking a look and peeking into the future. I want to spend a couple of seconds just expressing my gratitude to you guys that are watching on YouTube, that are watching on the website, that are listening on the podcast. Sooner Nation has been fantastic to us over the years. So when we started this thing in 2020, you guys have been amazing. Whether I'm talking about the Bowmans who live in my neighborhood and stop me and we talk for 20 or 30 minutes while I'm walking my dogs, or Mark and Tammy from Moore, who I met last night at the OU Team Hotel yesterday while we were working. Mm-hmm. They stopped me and said, Hoover, John Hoover, come here and talk to us. And we stopped and talked for 15 minutes about OU football. We love you guys so much because the numbers that we've put up in 2024 have been unbelievable. And that's thanks to you guys and your passion for OU football and your discernment for quality content by this guy right here. And sometimes I do some things as well.
So it's our man Carson who,
yes,
he was here today. He's
here.
Feeling sick, didn't want to be in a closed room, all that stuff. So we'll be back with him when he's up and feeling better.
You know, Carson, with Carson, we've had some transition. We've lost some really talented people to other jobs. The Sports Illustrated group, the OnSI Now group, went through a major, major, major transition back in April, early April. It was some scary times for all of us, but because of you guys, because of the passion that you have for OU and OU football, all things Crimson, right? Because of you guys, we have not only maintained, but we've grown and gotten more and more. The monthly numbers, I'm telling you guys, the traffic numbers that you guys bring to us are phenomenal. We're just so, so grateful for you all. So Mark and Tammy, there's your shout out. The Bowmans, there's your shout out. We love you guys. So thank you all very much.
It should be a pretty incredible way as this thing continues going. It doesn't stop here for us. Obviously, Hoops coverage, they get going again on Sunday. The Sooners have a pair of top 15 teams as they roll into SEC play. And if you're here, you know, I'm just February, we're about 60 days away until I become a very, very tired human once again. And softball fires up. We're going to have Carson mowing through baseball. So it should be a ton of fun. And then as always, like we said, we'll be sprinkling a ton of the spring football content. And it's a pivotal year across the board. Big close to the 24-25 academic calendar with how basketball started out in softball and baseball. And it'll be a big start once football gets going next fall. Real quick, I know this is an Oklahoma postgame podcast, but if you will. It's kind of cool. Stuck around for the Brian Newberry press conference with Navy just because we weren't doing a bunch of the players and stuff afterward. And so I was like, well, what else am I going to do? And a guy that you know the story, right? Westmore talked about he's still an Oklahoma football fan. To get to, first off, see the big grin twice. First, when I asked him, like we said earlier, about the start to the game and, oh, gosh. Then I asked him, did you think about going for it on that 4th-and-1 right before the 2-minute warning? And he had this huge grin. He's like, yeah, I thought about it for a long time. And he was talking about they still had 2 timeouts, see if we got the first down, what it could be over, all that stuff. But him just watching him talk about how when Oklahoma took the field, hearing the band play Boomer Sooner, he said looking across to that sideline, looking across the stadium, and he basically said there's not another red like that. It's a unique red. It's I know it sucks for Oklahoma fans, but it was really, really cool to see Brian Newberry, who has taken a different coaching path, a coaching path that has its challenges, has its benefits, but you know at the end of the day, every year Army and Navy are not putting themselves in college football playoff contention. Like that's kind of that's not the expectation. It's when the Creator Chief Trophy beat Army.
That's right.
Hopefully get to 10 wins, and he did that for the sixth time ever in program history.
He's fantastic. He's an easy guy to root for, and the fact that he grew up in Oklahoma City loving Oklahoma football and Jamil Holloway and Brian Bosworth, who was out here today, by the way, on the sideline, is just a cool, cool story for him. And so to have his career come back full circle moment here in Fort Worth, beating OU in a bowl game, like I said, he's easy to root for.
Yeah, for sure. So Hoof, we'll talk to you guys next Wednesday per usual. I think we've just about exhausted.
We did it. 13 games.
We did it. 13 games. 13 games shorthanded for most of the way. I can't believe how we did it, but we made it. Big shout out to Hoof. You can follow us all the places. Twitter at Sooners on SI. John is at Johnny Hoover. I'm at _ Ryan Chapman. Carson is at Carson D Field. OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. That's the website. Go there. Bookmark it. Easy peasy peasy. We're still going to have the portal tracker rolling. Bert Venables said they're not done in the portal. Expect to add probably 3 to 5 more guys. So as that hits, OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. Our transfer portal tracker's up and running. Hoops, Diamond Sports, Spring Football, all that fun stuff. Follow us on YouTube. John Hoover Media is the YouTube page. That's all. Signing off for the last time this year from Fort Worth. Big thank you to Hoob, as always, for just letting me do this. Big thank you to you guys. Like we said, as always, the crazy Twitter DMs and stuff, I always smile and love it. I actually love it because without that kind of passion, we wouldn't be able to do this. And for that, I'm always thankful. But we'll close it down now. We'll talk to you guys here on the Sooners on SI Pod next Wednesday. We'll see you.
The Buffalo Chicken Sub has arrived at Penn Station East Coast Subs. It's got the kick, it's got the crunch, and it's packed with bold buffalo flavor, melty cheese, and perfectly grilled chicken. Only for a limited time. Name a better pair than buffalo and chicken. Fresh cut fries and freshly squeezed lemonade? How about all of the above? Order the new Buffalo Chicken Sub any way you like it at your nearest Penn Station location today. Order ahead online at penn-station.com for easy pickup. Or enjoy it hot off the grill for dine-in at Penn Station East Coast Subs.